Hello, I'm Michael Heyman, and you're listening to Changemakers. Now, we have a real treat for you today. My guest today joins us from Jakarta in Indonesia. She is Ara Kasuma, an extraordinary and brilliant social entrepreneur, making a big difference in her community and beyond, and living up to that much-quoted phrase, be the change that you wish to see in the world. Ara began her Changemaker journey at the age of just 10 with the Moose Project, more of that in a moment, but is basically an initiative to improve the farming of cows. She was elected as a young changemaker by Ashoka, the global platform for social entrepreneurs, and she achieved this at the age of 11. And since then has founded many organizations, including AHA, a project and scheme to improve the access of study resources for children during the pandemic. Now 24, Ara is a changemaker in every sense of the word, correcting the problems she sees in the world and keeping her eyes open to new ways of making an impact. Ara, welcome to Changemakers. Absolute pleasure to have you on the show.
Hi, Michael. It's an honor to be here. Thank you for having me.
Oh, I tell you, we've got so much to talk about. Let's start with the cows. Tell us all about that.
Yes, that's my favorite part. You know, cows, I've been in love with cows for such a long time. I'm a huge fan of milk as well. They are my first love, I think. They are my source of energy and happiness. And I really like to visit, you know, the farms, the villages with my family to learn about, more about it. And of course, to also play with the cows.
So let's go back. So this is you as a very young child, sort of, you
right?
Know, because you set this initiative up at eight. And so I suppose you had a childhood fascination with the farm and with cows. And you then went on to come up with some really, really clever ideas about the farmers that you were meeting along the way. Tell us about that.
Yeah, so I realized that there's actually a difference in the way they manage the cows along the journey. Well, the cows are the same. They both produce milks, dungs, and they moo as well. But what I saw on the private farm was that they were able to optimize the resources the cows have integratedly, whereas in the villagers where each family typically owned 3 to 5 cows, we're managing them individually without any value added processing. So then my family had a conversation and I started to wonder, you know, what if we implement the integrated farming model like the one in the private farm to manage the cows in the village so that it becomes kind of like a village incorporation, like a private farm, but the profits and the benefits will not only go to one person, because the owner are all of the farmers. They co-own it together.
And this was the Moo Project. This such was born, a really influential and important initiative to help to provide a collective approach to farming and for the production of milk. I'm just wondering, when you were going to all of these sort of experienced farmers that have done things the same way for generations, and you're the grand old age of 8. What did they make of this sort of like young child that is like a young genius has come up with this idea? Did they accept it easily?
To be honest, no, because honestly, challenging the status quo was the biggest, you know, challenge that I faced when I ran the Moose Project, because people look down at me as a child, like, you're just born yesterday, what are you doing here? And also there is a hierarchy in where I live, where children are not supposed to kind of like talk freely to the adults, nor, you know, sharing their ideas on how a certain things could have been done. And farming was seen as a masculine field in Indonesia. So being a little girl who has a dream to make the cows and those who take care of the cows happy was not easy at all. But I also learned that, you know, throughout the process, that communications is not just about the what, but also the how and the who. So when I communicated this idea, it's not only about the idea itself, but how can I communicate this better to the villagers as well. So I realized that by using the peer communication, it was a better and smooth way to actually present this idea. So I first presented this to my family, my uncles, my aunts, my dad, my mom, and then they are the one who actually helped me to facilitate this to the farmers at the
right. So you basically, you had a family conference and you basically co-opted them into the project. I mean, it's an extraordinary story. And I think what we will do for listeners is there's a wonderful video that brings all of this to life. Do you sort of see that actually for an 8-year-old to have had this sort of effect is a pretty extraordinary thing? Because, you know, if we were interviewing you in your teens or your 20s, 30s, 40s, whatever, you might well say, well, this is what you would expect. But an 8-year-old, you might well, have been expected to be doing a lot of things, but collectivizing agriculture probably wouldn't be top of the list. I mean, I'm wondering where from within did this sort of change maker zeal come from?
It was actually coming from a very simple experience that I had when I was a child. I have a sister who is 1 year older than me, and unconsciously I always compared myself to her. Like, you know, when my sister was able to run, I could only learn to walk. When my sister could multiply and divide in mathematics, I could only, you know, was about to learn about the numbers. So I always compared things to her, and I got very upset about myself. Why couldn't I be, you know, better than her? Why am I always one step behind of her? And I was actually a little bit shy person when I was a child. But then again, my family really helped me along the process, and they shared about, you know, every one of us has the power within ourselves at that, you know, moment in time. No matter how old you are, there is the power within you. And they gave an example of my smile. I was a smiley girl. I guess I still am right now. And they shared
smiley. You're basically making me smile.
See, yeah, that's actually what my parents showed me before. Like, you know, when you smile, other people is also smiling, and smile is contagious. How you can actually impact other people's life and help them brighten it up a little bit in that day just by you smiling. So it was actually the moment.
Happiness, positivity.
Right, happiness, positivity.
Because you can, I mean, obviously listeners can't see what I'm seeing because we're sort of got a screen that we can see each other. But there is an inner joy, isn't there, to your personality, which is that you are curious about the world and curious about the solutions around it. Do you ever face confidence issues, though? Do you ever sort of like think, oh, I can't do that? Or is this basically the Ara story, the one of I can do it?
Well, there was a story of me feeling like, you know, questioning how can I do it, but not kind of like I can't do it, but it's just like, how can I do it? That was kind of like the way I think about things, because I guess the confidence that was being built throughout the time when since I was a kid, and I believe that as simple as smiling itself can impact someone's life a little bit better, I can do other things as well. It's just a matter of how to.
We'll get on to some of those other things in a moment, but I'm thinking back to one of my earlier interviews with a UK entrepreneur and political leader in the UK called Lord Billamoria. And he talked about that for him, the biggest challenge had always been overcoming no. So when people said to him, no, we're not going to back you. No, we're not going to trade with you. No, we're going to. And actually this kind of like, you know, overcoming the no. And I'm just wondering, in those early days when you were talking to farmers that probably might well have been a little bit more doubtful, let's say, to what degree that issue about being told no actually emboldened you to say, I'm going to get to yes?
That's a very interesting question. Yeah, I think, well, I've received a lot of no as well. And I think it's kind of like when we imagine a heart into several layers, the outer layer is kind of like a tough one where we received a lot of no, actually, but the inside layer is the soft one where we have the empathy to understand other people's perspective on why they're actually saying no. Mm. And by understanding those perspectives, I could understand why they say so, and then overcome that with, oh, this is my perspective, that is your perspective. Maybe it is not, you know, the time for us to collaborate right now, but let's find another way. So I think the curiosity of always finding solutions and finding another way, even though, yes, as a child, it was kind of like a discouraging moment for me to hear the no, like, you know, I was so excited about the idea, but other people thought about it as what is this idea? Like, they don't really believe in it, but curiosity, I think I keep going about it.
But it sounds like, you've also got another gift here, which is that you don't take it personally. You know, a lot of people, when they're told no, they'll think that it will lead to a great level of anxiety or insecurity. It feels like, you know, if at first you don't succeed, try again, as the saying goes. Let's move on, because, you know, fast forward 3 years, and you were recognized by the Global Platform for Social Entrepreneurship, Ashoka, as an elected young changemaker. And this episode is very much focusing on Ashoka. We've interviewed the founder, Bill Drayton, as part of this. And something he talked about was the importance for us all to give ourselves permission to do these things, that quite a lot of the first steps start within, and it starts with that kind of almost inner dialogue with how I might start to be the change. I wondered how that was reflected in your own journey, and indeed what it means for you to be such a young change maker as part of that Ashoka Fellowship.
I think right now we are actually in a special moment in history to shape a new future, and how as a young people we can contribute to that as well. For the last 40 years, Ashoka has sourced and selected exceptional social entrepreneurs across the world, but we cannot depend on these 4,000 Ashoka fellows and now close to 100 Ashoka young changemakers themselves to solve every problem in the society. And as the world becomes increasingly interconnected and the rate of change accelerates, while we need more people to find their creative actions to solve the most pressing problems in society. And right now, even, you know, the coronavirus pandemic has shown us how interconnected and interdependent we are, how a virus that began in a single city could touch all of us in a matter of moments, how a health issue is now impacting the economy, education, environment, social politics in many countries. So what I'm trying to say is that, you know, if we want a resilient country where problems do not outrun solutions, we need every single person to own their power and agency in making a difference, instead of just waiting for a handful of leaders or organizations to take actions. And to be an active player, every young person should learn and practice change making.
Well, you're certainly not waiting. I mean, you know, you've gone on from your initial work to create a new initiative, the AHA project. Tell us a little bit about that.
Yes. So it was actually started when I was at the low point during the self-quarantine days, where I felt so powerless. So yes, there was that time when I also felt, you know, powerless, that the pandemic issue was just too big to be solved, because all I saw was those terrifying news on my phone screen. Until I reflected back on my journey and changed my view from the national and global news on my screen to the surroundings outside my window. And there I saw children playing around on the street with their friends without masks during the school hours, which made me wonder, again, another questions and wondering moment, aren't they supposed to stay at home and attend online classes or so? And I talk about this with my family as well and friends, and it led me into a deeper concern that many still do not have the infrastructure and the access to the internet to access the online educational services. Either the data is too expensive, or they do not have the gadgets, or maybe some were finding the lessons too boring because teachers were not ready to suddenly, you know, face the sudden changes. So they were still using the old mindset of method and teaching. So these situations, you know, really triggered me to start the AHA project, where, you know, we commit on improving access to quality education at home through providing creative learning tools, which can be produced locally as well and disseminated through our local champions in rural areas. So we basically provide the two things in the education, the what and the how. The what is kind of like, what can they learn at home, which is the learning modules. And then the how is, how can they learn at home, which is through actually empowering the local people to facilitate the learning one another.
Mm. And I mean, you know, home education has been one of the, I suppose, common global experiences around the world in terms of societies having to pivot away from classrooms into whatever they can do to actually teach kids at the home. I mean, you provided a very interesting take on it, I thought, when you talked about your own family experience. I was reading the home education that you had received, and you know, you use this phrase that I've really resonated as a dad to two daughters. You said that the curriculum is designed by the family, and I thought, well, that is something that a lot of children and parents have been doing outside of the formal teaching world, is that their experience has been to create their own educational experience, and you know, we're all making it up as we go along. But I suppose that's also a bit about what the AHA project is about, in terms of how you keep that process of learning on the road.
Yes, that's right. And especially because today, as the world is changing, you know, we realize that educators are not only teachers, but also parents and also content creators, publishers. They play a lot of critical roles in equipping the learners with the right skills, agency, and knowledge they need to be able to thrive in this current world. And what I realized with that, instead of the static curriculum that we had in place, let's make it contextualized, storytelling based, with a lot of creative activities as well, and shifting the learning paradigm from just acquiring knowledge to learning how to learn. From, you know, memorizing a theory into discovering and applying it in real life. That, you know, a new paradigm where we appreciate the intangibles, which means, you know, the empathy, creativity, leadership, noble attitudes, as much as, or even over, you know, the tangibles, like the scores or the certificates that we have.
I noticed that on another podcast, Change the Narrative, you described yourself, first of all, as an introverted person. Let's come back to that, because that's certainly not something I'm recognizing on this interview. But you said your initial thoughts that, you know, you could feel in your comfort zone in the early days of the pandemic. And you use this phrase, I can work in my bedroom now. I mean, how does that feel kind of like sometime later in the experience? And let's pick up on this sort of... are the introvert.
Yes. So a lot of people thought that I am an extrovert because I work a lot with people, but actually I'm more kind of like an introvert. And as an introvert myself, I actually have kind of like the self-assurance as one of my strengths. That's why I'm also strength when other people say no, but I believe it has to be done. So I will have the perseverance to do so. Talking about introvert again, I think, yes, as an introvert, you know, the pandemic is also such a relief for me to not have to go out there and meet a lot of people in a day. I just, you know, stay in my bedroom, and then I could still meet a lot of people, but I feel I have my comfort zone, and I feel in my own safe space in my room.
Safe, secure, yeah.
Safe and secure space where I can ideate a lot of things as well. And that's where, you know, a lot of ideas were born, including the peer-to-peer community in Ashoka Young Changemakers and also the AHA project as well. It was kind of like a balance between the secure feelings in my bedroom, but also there is a boring moment in me, like in this, my own apartment, in my room, what can I do actually? What can I contribute to the world? And that kind of like wondering curiosity moment and the bored moment for me combined with the secured moment in my room is becoming a lot of ideation and brainstorming sessions.
I mean, I was reading a Medium article where you talked about some of the positives to come out of, you know, the tragedy of the pandemic. But it seemed that that digital connectivity was something that personally for you and a lot of the people you know has been a real game changer.
Yes, but that is at the same time, I think growing up with technology has made me realize how important humanity is and connectivity. Yes, technology is a tool that we can use to connect one another, but it was because of the human quality within ourselves, because of our empathy, because of our humility is the reasons why we can use technology in a positive way.
Mm. I mean, just a quick word, because I think listeners will be interested in terms of, you know, your you know, we're all going through this in cities and countries around the world. And, you know, I heard it described the other day as it's like we're all going through the same storm, but we're all in different ships. And, you know, I think people are interested in how different cities, different countries are going through that experience. I mean, you're in Jakarta today, living in Indonesia. Just a word on that pandemic experience from your perspective.
I think a lot of people, you know, take it differently as well, not only about, you know, the geographical level, but also individual level takes pandemic in differently. I think from my observations in Jakarta itself, we've gone through a lot of phases in the journey where at first we couldn't really believe that, is this really happening? I mean, is this pandemic really happening? And then we've got the first cases, I think it was in March last year, and suddenly people realized that this thing is real, and they started to worry about it, and people started to bought a lot of hand sanitizers and really protected themselves. But then along the journey, sometimes people kind of like, it's been a year and some of them have been, you know, less careful about it, and they're becoming less worried. And it's kind of like becoming a new normal that we are here in the pandemic. And this is our reality now. It's been a year. How can we adapt this fast? Mm. And this actually shows, you know, how vulnerable we are as a society and how vulnerable the system are, that we need to be ready to face a lot of changes every day. And if young people are not ready for that, how can we even face the world after the pandemic itself? If this is kind of like a test for us, the pandemic here. If you're not ready for this, how can you be ready for the world after the pandemic or even the next pandemic in the future?
It's interesting because if you were to tune into the radio here in the UK today, pretty much everything is about the vaccines and about their rollouts. But there is another debate as well, which is the responsibility of countries that are really sort of going far ahead to make sure that the world benefits from this innovation and, you know, wonderful breakthroughs, but to make sure that, you know, this is something where there is some equity and fairness, and not least because it's in everybody's interest to do so. I mean, if you were sort of wanting to give a message to listeners about, you know, about that, about the views that you might have, what would you share with us? What would be your message?
In Indonesia, we would call it gotong royong. So it's a value of co-helping and collaboratively working together towards the same visions. I feel like now the world has a common enemy. So the pandemic is our common enemy, where usually when we have a common enemy, we would be able to unite together and do something about it and be less think about our ego, but more kind of like collective actions towards the same vision. So this is actually our moment to foster more collaborations across countries. So in case, you know, for example, if we are doing the productive measures to prevent the transmissions just within our countries, but then not helping and advocating others to do so, it might also put us and our beloved ones in danger. So it is not something that we can solve alone, and we have to work together to fight this common enemy and achieve a better future.
I mean, when I listen to you, you're the sort of person that makes me get very excited about the potential of new generations of young leaders and young people with ideas, and how they might use some of the advances that the planet has been able to make in innovation to deal with so many big problems like climate change and others. But actually there is this huge level of positivity and can-do and optimism. And to that degree, a lot of people will say, well, look, people at Aura, they are the pathfinders. They are the examples of where things might go in a more positive direction. I wonder, when you hear things like that, because I'm sure I'm not the first that has said it, but I mean, when you hear things like that and you look around you, you know, you're now in your 20s, but, you know, I'm thinking about the next generation of 8-year-old Auras that are looking around the cities and communities, the farms, the places, in terms of how easy it is for them to affect change. Do you think things are getting better and easier, or is it, as a lot of people will say, actually the world is getting more difficult, not more easy to make positive change happen?
There is the side where, you know, right now the world is becoming more complex. Yes, that is a fact indeed. But there's also another way to look at it, where it is actually easier to create a change with a lot of opportunities out there, with technology, with the increased level of awareness on the issues that are happening around us. And, you know, I think as a young people, myself, I'm more, you know, kind of like positive and optimistic about it, especially how I also, you know, met a lot of Ajukayang changemakers from other countries as well. We've just welcomed the 43 young changemakers in the global community, in addition to the 53 that we elected in 2018 and 2019. And they're from India, Brazil, Indonesia, US, Bangladesh, working on so many different issues like agriculture, human rights, gender equality, education. And that, I think that was kind of like a moment for me where I realized that this is possible. Yes, it is still not a norm for a young kids in our country to create a change, but it was not impossible either. So this is a possibility for us that we should tap into. And young people are powerful. They are ready to go beyond themselves, to go beyond their initiatives, to help others to make a difference.
And I suppose when you look at the motivations for that, in terms of what comes from within, for some people that's driven by anger and frustration, and that can lead to outcomes. Some of them can be very negative and some of them can be positive. There is also those, and I think, you know, having listened to you and seeing how you come across, is that there is a serenity, a kindness, there's a gentleness to what you talk about. There is a kind of innate sort of positivity that kind of is more about persuasion, I suppose. The world of kindness is something that I think a lot of people are thinking about how they hope the world might change after the pandemic, when we talk about things like the reset or the rethink. I just wonder, a final thought from you in terms of people that are thinking this way, are the people that are thinking, you know what, I've just listened to a really wonderful, you know, sort of young change maker there. What's your message to them about that style, that kind of worldview, if you will, and its future?
Yes, I think the future is on our hands right now, and it depends on how we are acting towards it together. Right now, the world is divided between people who can play in the new game, who are ready to face the new world after the pandemic, and those who are, you know, who cannot and who are not ready for it. And those who can play are the ones who are aware of the current realities and have the ability to adapt and contribute in the world of change. The gap is getting wider, to be honest. I read an article about how it is going to create a K shape of gap in the future, but we want to ensure that everyone can take a role to help each other, regardless of the age and where we live, to close these gaps. And for adults, this might include, you know, creating the space for young people to lead, but for young people, it could mean, you know, discovering how you and your friends can support your community, whether it is speaking up about injustice, helping neighbors get food supplies, or organizing a group of friends to tutor younger students online. And, you know, together with the Ashoka Young Change Makers and also the strategic partners in the ecosystem of youth, like teachers, unions, media, publishers, governments, everyone, we can call it the movement to reach as many young people as possible. And there's always an opportunity to step up, whether in time of crisis or every day.
Well, all I can say is watch out, world. Thank you to my guest, Ara Kasuma. I mean, what a change maker. I hope you've enjoyed it as much as I have, Ara.
It's a pleasure for me. Thank you, Michael. I love your questions.
Listen, that's been absolutely brilliant to have you on the show. I think it's been an absolute showcase of positivity, optimism, and inspiring ideas about how you can make a difference. Do join me next time on Changemakers.